Now we're holding on page Tes Zayin in Yevamos Ois Lamed Ches. So again, the good part of the Perek is dealing with people who are not allowed to freely intermarry into the Jewish people. First, he talked about Tzurdaka and Kurus Trofcha, Mamzer, and now we're up to the Mishnah says, men from Ammon and Moav are also to intermarry freely into the Jewish people. They can marry a Giyordis, they can marry a Mamzeres, but not a regular born Jewish woman.
So yesterday's final line was, Shlomo is not married.
So we said the Gemara had finished off by saying that Shlomo did not necessarily marry Bas Pare as a full marriage, because then you'd have the problem that she's a mitzvah Rishona, and he would be also to do that. So, but now we're talking, now again, there is an opinion of Reb Shimon in the Mishnah where he says that he had a Kabbalah from his Rebbeim that mitzris are mutter, just as we're going to say over here, amoin, amoinus, and mayavis are mutter. So you could answer that Shlomo was following that opinion, but the Gemara seems to wanted to make it that Shlomo was going the whole hour. Okay, so the Mishnah says, amoinu mayavi asurin, the isurin isur olam. The isur is forever, meaning. So you have Reuven, so you have Joe, and Amoni becomes a ger and becomes Reuven. He's also to marry a Jewish woman. If he marries a Giyordis, let's say, and they have a son Shimon, same thing. Shimon has a son Levi, same thing. It keeps on going on forever, as the pasuk says, Gam Dor Asiri. Avon the Kevis Sehen Mataris Miyad. But women from Ammon and Moav who are Megayer are mutter right away to marry into the Jewish people, as with Ruth, as we're going to now discuss in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Menohani Mili. Where do we know that from? So, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Da'omar Kro, you have as follows. Here's the backstory. Now, we know that David is descended from Rus. And we know that it was quite controversial, as the Gemara is going to discuss over here, this point, this halacha, Amoni V'loi Amonis Me'ovi V'loi Me'ovis. So we actually have it. The Gemara is going to show that actually that the fact that that question was under discussion is hinted at in the Psukim. So you have in Sefer Shmuel, it tells the story how Goliath is challenging the Jewish people to send somebody to fight him, and you're all scaredy cats, et cetera, et cetera. Kitzur Amaisa, David shows up and beats him. After that, the pasuk says, "V'chir ois Shaul as David yotze v'krasa plishti." When Shaul saw David going out to fight the plishti, Vayomer, Omar is actually how it says in the pasuk, El Avner Sar HaTzava. So he asks Avner, the general of the army, Ben mi zeh hanar Avner. Avner, whose son is this? By Yomer Avner, and Avner answers, Chei nafshecha hamelech im yodaiti. I swear by your life, your majesty, that I don't know. Now, what do you mean? V'lo yodalei, Shaul and Avner don't know who David is and who his father is? V'hoksiv, in the previous perek, you have the whole story over there where Shaul was having fits of melancholy, where he's feeling sad and ruach ra and all that, and then he's advised to get a good musician to play music for him to help make him feel better. And so they found David, and the pasuk says by Yehoveu Ma'od, Shaul loved David very much. Obviously that changed later, but right now at this point he loved him. By he learned noisa kalim, and David became Shaul's arms bearer. So he's very close to Shaul. So of course Shaul knows who he is and who his father is. What's the question? So you're going to say, okay, he's not asking about David himself, but he's asking Ben Mizan Hanar, whose son is he? I know who he is, but who's his father? Still, the Oviv La Yodale, how could you say that he didn't know that he didn't know David's father Yishai? V'haksiv, we find that Yishai was actually quite well known and famous. V'haksiv, earlier in that perek, when it mentions David coming to David coming to the battlefield, where at first, by the way, remember he hadn't come to fight against Goliath in the first place. Only when he was there, he would discover what's going on. He came there in the first place. Yishai had sent him with food for his brothers who were in the army and several other things. Anyway, so the pasuk describes Yishai. V'ish b'mei shol zoken bav anoshim, the man Yishai in Shaul's times was old and coming with men. Now, what does that mean? Baba Noshim. You don't find such an expression by anybody else. That's referring to Yishai. Okay, he doesn't really need to say that, but that's because it says in the pasuk it's Yishai, but that's the style of the Gemara a lot of times. When he would come in and he would go out at the head of an uchlusa, a large crowd of people. Marashal refers to a Gemara in Brachas, which also says this, where it says over there that an uchlusa for this purpose means 600,000 people. So in other words, Parshat, he was a leader of a unit of the army of 600,000 people. So he's very famous. So how does Scholl not know? So how does Scholl not know who he is? That he's asking who is David's father? And it means, you know, when we're saying over here that he was Eitz Yosef points out, it would mean that it's both really. When we say that he was a Bob, that he was Zokin, Bob Anoshim, the word Zokin, as we know, refers to a Talmud Chacham. So it means he's leading these 600,000 people in war and also in peacetime. He's teaching them Torah. So how could Scholl not know about all of that? So the Rif, by the way, has an interesting point that he makes over here, that part of the question is, and part of what Scholl was trying to find out is, fine, we know that Yishai is this great hero and this great Talmud Chacham. When he's going to ask in the next pasuk, when he's going to ask David, so who is your father? What is David going to say? My father is, don't you know, my father is the great Talmud Chacham and hero and general Yishai. And instead he just says, my father is Abdecha Yishai Beis Halachmi, like in a very humble way. So the question is though, but so that was part of what Scholl is asking. In other words, the Gemara is going to explain. He wanted to know what family Yishai comes from, but the Rif explains over here that he also had an undertone over there to find out. So what's David's mentality about all of this? Is he proud of it? Is he going to pride himself on the fact, look what Yichus I come from, or not? Anyway, so. So what Scholl means when he asks Avner, he says, Zil She'il, go ask and find out, Imi Peretz Osi, Imi Zerach Osi. Yishai, fine, I know who Yishai is and I know who David is, but what branch of Shevet Yehuda does he come from? Imi Peretz Osi, and now, as the Gemara is going to point out in the next few lines, Scholl had reason to know that David eventually is going to become, that this isn't just a one-off thing, that he killed Goliath, and that's that. Scholl already had good reason to realize that David is going to go on to great things. So now he wants to know, is David descended from Peretz or from Zerach? Why he didn't wonder, I mean, Yehuda also had another son, Shelah. Why he didn't ask about that, Vesachnish. But in any case, the point is, within the descendants of Yehuda and Tamar, which one does he come from? Imi Peretz Osi. If he descends from Peretz, Malka Havi. Then that means he may be, when I can realize, based on what happened just before, that he's going to become a king, that he's going to become a great person, means he's actually going to become a king. Because Peretz represents Shamalach Peretz Lasses Derech, because we know La Halacha, a king can breach through a wall, the Ein Mamachin Biyodeh, and nobody can protest. If the king needs a road for his troops to go to war or whatever, then he's entitled to break through people's fields and whatnot. He has to pay afterwards, fine, but he has the right to do that, whereas a regular person wouldn't. So Peretz represents that idea. Ma Peretz to Halacha Peretz. We're talking about Mashiach is descended from Peretz. It has the same idea that he'll break through all the barriers over there. And Scholl says, if he comes from Zerach, then I have less to worry about competition from him. It means he'll become a great, important person, but he won't become a king. So that's why he wants to know. So that when he's saying Ben Mizehanar, he doesn't mean who's his father, and the answer would be Yishai. The question is, which branch of Shevet Yehuda does Yishai in turn come from? Eon Yaakov also mentions a point over here, the Gemara mentions in other places, that soldiers in the army in those times had to have a good yichus. It wasn't enough that they know how to fight or whatever. They had to be from not yichus necessarily in the same sense that we use it nowadays as being from a distinguished family, but at least that they have to be from a kosher family. No mamzerim, no avodim, no other psula yichus or whatever. So that's also part of what he's asking over here. So he's saying that we want to know where he comes from. My time omale, Scholl ale. Now, why Bechlal is Scholl asking in the first place? What makes him think that David is going to become so important in the first place that he even has reason to ask? So the reason is Mishum Mone, because of what happened with David's, what happened with Scholl's clothing. Dichtiv, earlier in the story you have, when David comes forth, so you have, again, Goliath has been hurling insults and saying, you know, you guys are all afraid to fight against me. The Gemara in Soita says he was even saying, Kav Yochel Hashem has no ability, etc. But anyway, so Scholl is making an announcement throughout the Machna. Anybody who goes up against this guy and defeats him is going to get tremendous rewards, and David steps forward. So the pasuk describes by Yalbus Sholas David Madov. So Shol dressed David in his Madov. Now my Madov, what does that word Madov mean? If it just meant his clothing, it would be begodov or something. It means kimidosai. It means that this is clothing that's fitted to Shol. Uchtiv. But then the pasuk continues. Uchtiv be Shol. Now we know earlier when Shol was first introduced, it says Mishichme v'mayla gavoya mikolaam, that he was a head taller, his head and shoulders were taller than everybody else. Beruchnius, it means, it talks about Chassidus, the idea that Shol was such a dehoiben a mensch, that his midos, represented by the body, by the shoulders, are higher than most people's moichin. But bepashtos, it means poshut in the simple sense also. He was a head taller, he was a head and shoulders taller than everybody else. So
what does dehoiben mean?
What?
Dehoiben a mensch. What is
dehoiben a mensch means an exalted person.
Exalted.
So he's so exalted that his midos, represented by his torso, by his arms and body, are higher than most people's head. But in simple pshat as well, he was a tall person. So now, and he's taking his clothing and he's putting it on David and it fits. Omar, so Shol starts thinking to himself, Mechti mishichva v'mayla gavoya mikolaam. Look at that. I'm a head taller than everybody else. My haimid is Ramu Le Manoi. How comes it then that my clothing precisely fitted him? Shmamina Malkahavi. Therefore, Shol starts thinking to himself, he may end up being a king, and therefore he wants to know, is he in fact from Peretz or from Zerach? And if he's from Zerach, fine, he's not going to be able to become the king. The kingship has to come from Peretz, but nevertheless, he'll be an important person. Which, by the way, the Pasuk mentions afterwards, it says that David tried to go with the clothing and he found it doesn't mean it's not really comfortable, and he took it off and gave it back to Shol and said, it's fine, I'll go fight against Goliath with what I'm wearing now. Mephoshim explained that the Medrash mentions actually that's precisely it. David looked and he saw that Shol is starting to give him a look over there, like what's going on over here. So David realized, let me take it off as soon as possible in order not to excite Shol's jealousy. Why Taka did the Eibishter make that nest, though? Ben Yehoyada points out, after all, the Eibishter doesn't do nissim for nothing. Why was it necessary if B'derech HaTeva, the clothing is not going to fit David? So why did the Eibishter make it fit him? So Ben Yehoyada brings an interesting idea, Alpi Kabbalah. We have actually in Kabbalah, but you have a certain amount of it in Nigla as well. We know that Rochel is the one who prepared the way for Leah to marry Yaakov. She gave her the simanim. And Alpi Kabbalah, there's that idea in general that Rochel has to pave the way for Leah. We find when Mashiach comes, for example, you have Mashiach ben Yosef from Rochel paving the way for Mashiach ben David. So here in the same way, Shol, who's from Shevet ben Yamin, therefore from Rochel, has to start the first process of making David be the eventual king, represented by wearing his clothing. So he didn't realize he's doing that, but that's how the Eibishter made it work out that way, and that it would fit David. So you could say that therefore Shol, as the representative of Rochel, has done the first stage in bringing David to his eventual kingship. So that was Shol's question. Marshosk explained when we say the Gemara is mentioning Madov, in other words, that it fit Shol exactly, but now we're saying it fit David. There's really two ways of explaining the word Madov in the pasuk. It can mean his clothing, as in what would be appropriate for David, because Bederach Nes it fit him. Or you could say Madov refers to Shol. It was Shol's clothing, and now Bederach Nes it fit David. Anyway, the point is, but now Omale Doyeg HaDoimi. So now comes Doyeg HaDoimi. Now he's not mentioned, unlike Shol and Avner and David, who are mentioned in the Psukim as being there at the time. It doesn't say in the Psukim that Doeg was there, but the Gemara knew the Kabbalah that he was. So Doeg HaDoimi, who we know was always the enemy of David, he says, Ad Shatam Mashal Olavim Hogun Hulamalchus. Look, Shol, you're asking whether he's suitable to be king, whether he comes from Peretz or not. In lav, or if not, you have a more basic question. Shalov him roy love bakohol in lav. Ask whether Bachlali is even allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. Mishum dekaosim Rus haMayavia. After all, his great grandmother was Rus haMayavia, and the Mayavim are not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. And that would mean Bachlal, he has no business being in the army, because the people in the army, as we said, have to be miyuchasim. He certainly has no business being a king, because even a king has to be mikerev achecha, mimuvcha shebachecha, from the highest level of yichus among the Jewish people. So Doeg is telling Shol, never mind whether he's going to be a king. He's Bachlal apostle. He's Bachlal apostle love ever call. Omale Avner. So Avner says, what are you talking about? Tanena, we learn in the Mishnah. Now, the Mishnah hadn't been composed at that time, but it's a halacha, which was known. Amoni v'loi amonis, mayovi v'loi mayovis. So when the Pasuk says amoni and mayovi, then it means specifically the men, not the women. Tosfos actually discusses, it's not here in the Gemara, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, it's in the Gemara, that one way of understanding it is because the Pasuk could have said Amon and Moyav without the Yud at the end. So the Yud, which is the marker for Lashon Zachar, would tell us that it means only the men. So Doeg says, what do you mean? Elamayata, by that logic, mamzer v'loy mamzeres. What about a couple of psukim earlier, it says, lo yovim mamzer b'kal Hashem. By your logic, since it says mamzer in Loshen Zohar, you're going to say that a female mamzeres is allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. And we know it's not so. So Avner answers, that's different. Mamzer ksiv mumzer. The difference is, because what does the word mamzer mean? It's short for mumzer, a foreign blemish. Meaning this is the kind of blemish, a psul like that, that comes from a couple having relations where there's chorus or missus based and involved. It's a blemish, and it's a kind of thing that's foreign altogether to the Jewish people. And so they're foreign to each other in the sense kedushin aren't even toifus between them. You know, the earlier in the Masechta, it discusses in detail, we touched on, you had several different opinions, what kind of unions produce a mamzer. But in any case, it's a foreign kind of thing among the Jewish people. It doesn't belong among us. So therefore, so a mamzer, a mamzeres, whether the child is a male or a female, the same thing applies. Okay, Doeg says, what about mitzri v'lay mitzris? What about, by your logic, you should say that the din, that a mitzri ger cannot intermarry into the Jewish people until three generations, applies only to a mitzri and not a mitzris. Now again, you do have the opinion of Reb Shimon in the Mishnah who says just that, but that's not the halacha. So what do you do then? The fact is it says mitzvi. So Avner answers, shiny hocha, you know what? It's like this. It's true. Usually the fact that the Torah says it in Loshen Zachar is not meant to mean only Zachorim and not Nekevis. We have a concept that's mentioned in other places, kol ha-Torah kula b'Loshen Zachar Nemra. In general, by default, the Torah usually phrases things in Loshen Zachar. But in general, it includes women unless otherwise specified. But shiny hocha, but Avner says, this case is different with Amon and Moav, d'mefarish taima d'kra. Because the Pasuk itself gives the reason why the Amonim and Mayovim are not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. The Pasuk says, Al Dvar Asher Lekidmu Eschem Alechem Ramayim, because they did not come to greet you with bread and water, meaning the Amonim and Mayovim, when the Jewish people are passing by their lands, they should have come out and offered them food, like you do to, like you're supposed to, when a guest is coming through. In fact, these nations are descended from Lot. Lot had learned from Avraham Avinu the concept of Achnasas Orchim. We see that he did it even at the risk of his life in Sodom. So Ayitochen, that these descendants of his don't do that. So it's normal for the men to go out and offer food like that. It's not the normal thing for women to do. So therefore, so the Pasuk itself is implying that the women are not included in the Isser. The Ramban actually on the Pesukim has a different explanation. He points to, there's a Pasuk in Parshas Devarim that implies that the Mayavim did give them food. So he explains that there's two different things. With Ammon, it's that they didn't give them food. With Moav, it says the Pasuk goes on to mention also that they hired Bilam to curse the Jewish people. So the Ramban learns that's something specific that we know that's specific to Moav. That was Balak Melech Moav. So he learns there's two different things. The Ammonim are rejected because they didn't offer the food and the water. The Moavim are rejected because they hired Bilam. Same thing. It's the men that are involved in hiring that. The women have nothing to do with it. So therefore, Avner says, the Pasuk itself is implying that it applies only to the men, not the women. Doeg says, so what? What do you mean? Hoyolahem l'kadim anoshim l'kras anoshim anoshim l'kras noshim. What do you mean? Fine, you're not going to have the women of Ammon and Moav are going to go out and offer food to the men, but at least they should be going and offering food to the Jewish women. And if they didn't, then they should be held responsible for that. And therefore, the Pasuk should be implying that both of them are also. Ishtik. So at that point, Avner was silent. He didn't have a response. He didn't have a response to that. It's true. But based on that logic, you would have to say that the din applies to men as well as to women. Miyad. So then the next pasuk continues. By Yomer Hamelach. So the king Shaul says to Avner, Sha'al ata ben mizeh ha'olem. Ask. Whose son is this young man? So the previous pasuk, which the Gemara had quoted before, Shaul says to Avner, whose son is this? And Avner says, I don't know. So now Shaul is telling him, go and ask whose son is this? Now, why the word ha'olem? Hossam korile nar v'hocha korile elam. For the previous pasuk, he was called a nar. Now, though nar doesn't mean necessarily such a young man. David at this point, was 28 years old. But still, I mean, we find Yeshua is called a nar even when he was a lot older. And nar means like somebody who was energetic and young. Not necessarily young in age, but energetic in the way he acts. Elam is also a word that means that, but why is it changing? Why did it say nar and now it says elam? So hachikam alei halacha zunis alma mimcha. So Shaul is telling Avner, apparently this halacha has been hidden from you. You said that there's this halacha amoni v'lo yamonis, but apparently you're not clear on it because here Doyeg just slogged you up. Say or shall be beis medrash. So when he tells him go ask, he doesn't mean go ask David. He means go ask in the beis medrash what is in fact the halacha. Shaul, so Avner went and asked Amrulei, and they told him yes amoni v'lo yamonis mayavi v'lo yamavis. So the Chachmei Yeshiva confirmed that that's how it is. Actually, Doyeg Kohani Kushyasa. Well, Doyeg went through the whole discussion with them also, the same discussion that he just went through with Avner and seemingly slugged up that it doesn't work. How could you say that? How could you say the Pasuk is implying that the women are mutter? So they were going to make a public announcement that David and his whole family are Psulei Kohol because they're descended from Rus. Miyad, then we have another person comes in over here. Now, the next pasuk the Gemara is going to quote is not in the same context as the other psukim, but the Gemara is understanding that it took place at this time. The pasuk later on in Sefer Shmuel and Shmuel Beis introduces Amasa. Now, Amasa was actually both Amasa was a nephew of David. So the pasuk mentions his yichus, but Amasa ben Ish. Amasa was the son of a man of Shmo Yisra Yisraeli, whose name was Yisra the Yisraeli, a Yid. Asher bo al Avigail bas Avigail. Actually, it says in the pasuk bas Nachash, where he married and had relations with Avigail, the daughter of Nachash. Now we know there's the famous Avigail who was the wife of David. Formerly, she had been the wife of Nabal, and the Nabal dropped dead, and David married her. This was a different Avigail who was David's sister. So she married this Yisra HaYisraeli, and their son was Amasa, who therefore Amasa is David's nephew. Why it says bas Nachash? By the way, the Gemara in Baba Basra mentions that Nachash over here is another name for Yishai, and he's so called because he was one of the few people in history that Mesu Be'etia Shal Nachash, who died only because of the Chet Tzadas, because every person has to die as a result of that, and not because of any Averis of his own, and therefore it calls him Nachash in token of that. The Radak, actually, on the Pasuk has a different explanation, that maybe Nachash, that maybe David's mother, Nitzeves Basador, the Gemara calls her in Baba Basra, maybe she had previously been married to a man named Nachash, and Avigail was their daughter, and then later on her husband died or divorced her, and she married Yishai, and she had all the children, including David. In which case, Avigail would be David's half-sister. Be that as it may, the point is that, so why is this Yisra HaYisraeli, Uchtiv, but then in a different pasuk in Divra HaYomim, when it mentions Amasa again, it calls his father Yeser HaYishmaeli. Now, Yeser and Yisra, fine, are basically the same name, but in one pasuk it's calling him the Yisraeli, a Yid, and in the other one it's calling him Yishmaeli. So in a simple pshat, Mephoshim say it might mean that he was living among the Yishmaelim for a while, or maybe even that he was a Yishmaeli who became a Ger, but here the Gemara doesn't like that. The Gemara is assuming that he's a born Yid, but why, and not that he just lived among the Yishmaelim, so why is he called a Yishmaeli? Omar Rava, Melamet Shechoga Chayrik Yishmael. At this point, when this whole thing is going on, Yisra strapped on his sword like the way the Yishmaelim do. The Omar, and he announced, Kol mi she'ene shemeya halacha zu, anybody who does not listen to this halacha that the Chachmei HaYeshiva had said, Amoni v'layamayos, yidoka b'chorev, is going to be stabbed with a sword, because you think it's just a matter of logic, of analyzing the psukim with logic, and then Doyeg can slug it up. No, kach mekublani mi beis dinish or Shmuel HaRamasi. I have the Kabbalah from Shmuel HaRamasi that this is in fact the halacha, and there's no slugging it up. Amoni v'layamayos, mayavi v'layamayos. So in token of that, the pasuk calls him Yishmaeli. My short wonder is, I mean, we find in this week's parasha, for example, Esav is the one with a sword. Why are we associating the sword particularly with Yishmael over here? So he leaves the question open. Mephoshim give a couple of answers. One of them, one interesting one, Ben Yehoyada says there are actually different kinds of swords. He mentions in his times, for example, you have a long sword, and then you have a short one that they, in English, is called a scimitar. Those little, you sometimes see in old pictures of like Turkish soldiers or whatever, they carry these little short curved swords. Those are used more for stabbing, whereas a regular sword is used more for striking. So here, where he's threatening to stab people for not listening to this halacha, so he's talking about a short sword of the type that Ishmaelim use, rather than the long one that the type that their daimim use, says Ben Yehoyada. In any case, how is he? What kind of a threat is that? Since when do you establish halacha based on threats? So Marsha explains that, look, according to Doeg, it comes out that anybody who did have relations with an Ammonis or a Mayavis, for example, Boaz, would deserve to be stabbed, just like Pinchas did with Cosby and Zimri. So therefore, when this Yeser or Yisra is saying, no, that's not how it is, the halacha is not like that, so Midah Keneged Midah, anybody who claims that such a person involved in such a relationship deserves to be stabbed, he himself deserves to be stabbed. Another point is also, he's saying that Yun Yaakov says it's also moded b'malchus. To say that people descended from Rus are possible love of Bekohol, which is going to say that David is possible, then eventually that's going to impinge on Malchus based David, and such a person is murdered by Malchus, and a murdered Malchus gets killed with a sword. So that's another reason why he's threatening people with a sword about it. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Umi Meheman, that's fine, but how can we trust Yisra or his son Amasa to say this halacha under these circumstances and that we should accept, and that we should accept that is in fact the halacha? Didn't Rab Abba say in the name of Rav, Kol Tamad Chacham Shemurda Halacha Uva? When a Tamad Chacham comes and tells us the halacha on a particular case, Im Kodem Meister Omra, if he tells us before the actual case comes up, so if, in other words, before this whole thing had come up, he had come and told us, you know, the halacha is Amoni v'lay Amonis, Shomin Loi, then we listen to him and we accept what he's saying is a valid halacha. The Im Lav, but if not, Ein Shomin Loi, we don't listen to him because it might be he's saying it only because the Maisa Shabbala Yodav. So if, in other words, you have that he taught his Talmidim in the Beis Medrash, Rashi explains, and now when it comes an actual case, then we can listen to him. But otherwise, we have reason to think that maybe he's actually making it fit the case that's at hand now, and that the halacha is not really valid. Now, what do you mean? Do we mean that Talmud Chacham is going to outright lie? No, not that he's going to blatantly, deliberately lie, but first, a person has a certain bias, and therefore, when you have a maisa involved over here, then he might, you have an actual case now, and it might cause him to misunderstand the halacha that he'd previously learned and to misapply it in this case when it shouldn't really apply. Because a person has a natural tendency to want to be right. So the question is, now that the question had been brought up about Amoni v'lay Amonis, so how can we believe Yisra or Amasa, whichever one it was, that's saying this? How can we believe him that in fact Shmuel said this? Tosfos actually brings up the point that not necessarily that rule that the Gemara is saying may apply only when he's a Negea Bedover. Well, the answer is Amasa or his father is a Negea Bedover over here, because again, we're saying that Amasa was the son of Avigail, who in turn is the daughter of Yishai, and Yishai is the grandson of Rus. So therefore, it does directly impinge on him. So therefore, he is Negea Bedover, and that's what the Gemara is asking. Mela, if it had come up earlier, then fine. But now, when it's being questioned whether he's apostle, and now he wants to say this is Valocha because Shmuel said so, how can we accept that? Maybe he's misapplying the halacha. The answer is Shadi Hocha the Shmuel based in Ekayim, because it's different over here. You know what? Shmuel and his based in are still around, so it's a Milsa David Glui. You know, we have the general rule, Milsa David Glui, when you have something that's easily found out, Lo Mishakri button, people don't lie about it. Nowadays, often we see that people do, and there's a famous expression I think that Rebbe brought sometimes that maybe you have to say such people aren't inshi. But anyway, the point is that when you have something that's very obvious, that's easily checkable, then people generally don't lie about it. So here it would be very easy. Shmuel's still alive. It would be very easy to go ask him, did you Taka say that? So there's no problem if Amasa or his father Yeser is saying this now, because we can easily check it, and therefore we can trust that what he's saying is correct. Okay. So fine, so that is the halacha, but the Gemara asks Mikol Makom Kasha. After all said and done, don't you have a kasha, though? The fact is, Doyeg seems to have a point. Why taka if you're saying that it's because they didn't go and bring food to the Jewish people, then the women could have just as well brought food to the Jewish women. So hocha here in Bavel Taugimu, they explain because of the pasuk says kol kvud bas melach nima, the covered of the king's daughter was inside, meaning women are tznisti. So they're not going to come out and offer food. Now, Mephoshim asks, what do you mean? The Goyish women over here, the women of Ammon and Moav, the ones especially with Moav that we find that they went and seduced the Jewish people, we're going to say on them, kol kvud bas melach nima. So one explanation is that what it means is, the Marshal explains, the Jewish women wouldn't be coming out. Therefore the Goyish women wouldn't, they're not going to walk into Machne Yisrael to offer them food. Because in other words, when we're saying kol kodas melech pnim, we don't mean the Goyish women are tzniyistik. We mean the Jewish women are tzniyistik. And because of that, the Goyish women didn't bother coming out to offer them food. So that's one explanation. But Ma'arova Amri in the West, in Eretz Yisrael, they brought based on a different pasuk. V'itame Rabbi Yitzchak, or some say Rabbi Yitzchak said, Omakra, we have, when the Malachim visit Avraham and Sarah, Vayomru Elov, they asked Avraham, Aye Sarah Ishtecha, where's your wife Sarah? Vayomru, and he said, Hine Ba'ohel, behold, she's in the tent, which shows that she was tzniyistik. Gemara explains in Bava Metzia, Rashi brings it on the pasuk that he wanted to make mention of the fact that in fact Rashi says over there based on the Gemara, they knew where Sarah was. They mentioned this point, l'chab v'al baila, to make her more dear to her husband. So in other words, like this, when Avraham has the opportunity to answer Hine Ba'oil, it makes himself realize, you know, wow, look at that. What an Eishes Chayil that I have, that Hine Ba'oil, that she's tzniyistik. And he's been married to her already by that time for 80 years or whatever it is. But still, you know, it's good to constantly be reminded and reinforce these things. Anyway, the point is the same idea. In other words, women are tzniyistik, and therefore we don't expect that they would be coming out and offering the food. There's in fact an interesting explanation that is why. Now, after that is when the Malachim went to Sidoim to overturn it and to save Lloyd and his family, and from that eventually came Ammon and Moab. So there's actually an explanation that's why they Davka did that beforehand, is precisely in order to establish that precedent that there is tznius among women that you don't find as much among men, that in turn gives us a precedent that Hashem has reason to save Lloyd and his daughters from Sidoim, so that they will eventually become the parents of the nations of Ammon and Moab, from which Ammoni v'lo Ammonis, Moav v'lo Moabis, and as the Gemara is going to say, Malchus based David descended from them. So in order to make that work, it required that you have a precedent for the concept of women being tzniyistik, and therefore the Malachim did that, created that precedent by saying Aye Sarah Ishtecha, and Avraham answering Hine Ba'oil. So the Gemara points out Ketanoi. There's actually a Machlokas Tanoim about Taka, where we learn from. It is that is the established halacha, Amoni v'loy Amonis, etc. But Taka, why? How do we learn it from the Pesukim? Amoni v'loy Amonis me'ovir v'loy me'ovis divir Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says that we just learn it from the Loshon HaPasuk, the fact that it says Amoni and me'ovi, implying only the men, as Tosfos had said, that we learn from the Yud. Reb Shimon Omer, al-dvar asher l'kidmo eschem, alachem amayim, dakar shalish l'kadim chola, and Reb Shimon points out the point about the men going to offer food and the women not. So the same discussion that they had in the times of Avner and Doeg and Amosa is the same discussion that the Tanoim had later on about what exactly is the source and the pasuk for this whole concept. Marshall elsewhere points out an interesting thing. We know when it came to Loit and his daughter, as the Gemara mentions, Loit was in it for the znus. Okay, at that point he was drunk. He was drunk out of his mind. He didn't know what's going on. But still, as Rashi mentions, he wasn't careful the next night, even though he knew what had happened the first night. So he was into it because of Dvar Avera. He was into Gemara mentions, where we'll learn in a few months from now in Nazir Bez Hashem that he's into it for the znus reason. Whereas they were doing it, they thought it's a mitzvah. They thought the whole world, all of humanity is destroyed and they have to repopulate the earth. So in token of that, therefore, is why the men who are like Loit are the ones who are also to marry into the Jewish people, and the women who are like the daughters are the ones who are mutter to. Marsha deals with, by the way, at some length over here, that if we're saying, so ultimately we're saying this is the halacha, but we're saying that Doeg was challenging it and saying it shouldn't be. You have to ask, three generations earlier, Boaz had married Ruth. Everybody knows that Boaz was a tzaddik, he was the shofar to the Jewish people. Is Doeg going to be coming and saying, oh, you should know 80 years ago, 100 years ago, whatever it was, that Boaz was a choyte and he did something that's outright osur? It doesn't seem to work. And you have over there Vayikach Hasara Anoshim. He's doing it in the presence of the Beis Din of in the front of the Beis Din of Beis Lechem. What's going on over here? So how could he even have the possibility of thinking such a thing would be osur? So there are Mefoshim actually who answer that Doeg was saying, look, if we're only learning it from a drosha of the Psukim, the Rambam mentions a later Beis Din has the ability to overturn a drosha of Psukim, that is something that was learned with the Yugdum Amidus that an earlier Beis Din did, a later Beis Din can overturn it. So Doeg could be saying, fine, Boaz and his Beis Din in their time decided that this is what the Pasuk means, but it doesn't have to. I can slug it up logically, as he did over here. And therefore, the halacha ought to change, and we ought to find Boaz in his time did what he decided was valid up here, halacha, but that could change now. Marsha, though, gives a different explanation. For that matter, also, Marsha brings also, the point is, the question is also, in the story in Rus itself, so what do you have? Boaz says to the Goyal, these fields have to be bought back to keep in the family and you need to marry Ruth. And the guy says, loy ashchis es nachlosi. I don't want to destroy my descendants by marrying a woman that I'm not allowed to. And Boaz goes, I mean, the Goyal's going to have the chutzpah to talk to Boaz and tell him, I'm not going to do something that's also, and you're going to go and do it. How you talking? So Marsha explains like this. We know there's a concept of Yibum. Now before the Torah was given, we know after the Torah was given, Yibum is exclusively between a brother of the mess and his wife. Before the Torah was given, we find, for example, with Yehuda, that it could apply to other close relatives as well. We have Yehuda eventually did Yibum with Tamar. And even after Matan Torah, obviously you have the concept of Arayas, but nevertheless, where it's mutter, then they would still do it because they knew the importance of Yibum and what it accomplishes for the neshama of the mess. So both the Goyal and Boaz, they're relatives of the family. They're not closely related enough for it to be an issue of erva, but they're closely related enough that when they marry Rus, then it would be a benefit for the neshama. So the Goyal is saying like this: fine, if it comes to doing yibum or even like the symbolic yibum that we're doing now, fine, we could say esa doicha loisese. You know what? Fine, there's a loisese, maybe not to have relations with a mayavis like Rus, but nevertheless, the esa of yibum would be doicha that only the one time. But he's saying that the fact is, what's going to happen? I'm going to have children with her. Those children are going to be posel as well. So loy ashchis and loy ashchis es nachlosi. He's saying, but I have children from another wife that I have already. And then people over time are going to forget which ones came from my other wife and which ones came from her. And the result is people are going to think all of them are posel. Meanwhile, he says to Boaz, you don't have that problem. Boaz, the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra, based on Psukim and Sefer Shoftim, had many children, but they all passed away by this time. Then he had the one son, Ovid, with Rus, who became the ancestor of David and of Mashiach. So therefore, so he's telling him, you have less to worry about. For you, it'll be mutter, it'll be perfectly mutter, as Yibum, because Esa Doicha Lo Seseh. And there won't be any problem. Ashkes es nachlosi. People may say your children are posel. Fine, at least it won't affect your children who are already kosher. So you go ahead and do that. So now we're. And in fact, the fact is, your Boaz married her, and that night they had relations the one time, and then he passed away. So now, a few generations later, Doeg is saying, fine, I agree Boaz didn't do anything wrong. He did because Esa Doicha Lo Seseh. So therefore, he did Yibum, even though she might be Posel Lava Bakal. But nevertheless, the fact is, their descendants, Ovid, and then Yishai and David, are all going to be Posel. Ion Yaakov, so that would be how he could say that without saying outright that Boaz did something wrong.
But that means that all their kids since then married Isurei Chasmus.
Yeah, so according to Doeg, that would be the case. According to Doeg, we would have to say that Ovid and Yishai and David and anybody in the family by that point, anybody in the extended family by that point who had married had done so by Isur, and their children would be possible, yeah. Even Yaakov, by the way, makes a different point. We know the women are mutter, but Doeg's mistake was thinking, okay, so what you're going to have is like this, for example. So let's say, for example, Boaz has married Ruth. Ovid, their son, will in fact be osur, lover bekal. If they have a daughter, if Ovid has a sister, she'll be mutter, lover bekal. In other words, he's arguing the same psul that we said in the Mishnah about the men should apply for the women generation by generation. So any generation where they have a daughter, she'll be mutter. But any generation, any time they have a son, then he'd be osur. So, and that was Doeg's mistake. So in that sense, you could say that Boaz is not necessarily doing something wrong per se, al pi halacha, but nevertheless, you could still say that any sons that he would have, Ovid and then Yishai and then David, Doyeg is arguing would be possible. And therefore, eventually we have to say, no, it's a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, that it's not so that Ammoni v'loy ma'amonis, ma'ovi v'loy ma'ovis, and therefore they are perfectly kosher. We do find, by the way, many times that this continued to be an issue. Doeg kept on bringing it up. Achitofel brought it up. Various other enemies of David kept on bringing it up and arguing that he's possible because of that. Even when you have when Shimi ben Gera cursed out David when he's running away from Avshalom, the Pasuk said, David says on it, Ruhu kilolani klolam nimretzes. He cursed me with a very powerful curse. And the Gemara mentions the word nimretzes is an acronym for different things that Shimi was accusing him of. And the mem stands for Moyovi. But he's still claiming he's a Moyovi and he doesn't belong among the Jewish people, even after all of that. So, in fact, also, you know, when you see that Boaz passed away the night after he married Ruth, that must have strengthened that kind of supposition as well. Look at that. He maybe Taka did do something wrong, and therefore the Abisha took him away, whereas they didn't realize, okay, it's the only thing. Boaz was staying alive all that time just so that he'd be able to have the one son, Ovid, who eventually from him comes David and comes Mashiach.
This is after all.
Other children passed away too, yes. All right. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola.
Quiet.
Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola. Chavob Cheshvin. So the Rebbe talked about when we talk about Mashiach coming, it's also going to be poil on the past. When we have the complete shlemus, the geula mitzvah shlema, the pashtus and the gashmius, it'll actually have an effect retroactively on the past. Meaning, right now, this moment, this particular moment, Mashiach hasn't come yet. But when he comes the next moment, then he brings in the aleph of geula into the alufa shel olam into the world. So it means that even the moments before that are going to already be part of the geula as well. Should be right now, mamish.
Amen. It's coming up.
Continuing with halachas of muktzah, you have kelim that are used for malacha that's also on Shabbos. For example, a hammer and various other kinds of things like that. So he gives a whole bunch of lists, a whole bunch of lists of things like that. All of them are you're allowed to move them with tzorach gufam. You're allowed to use them. You're allowed to move them on Shabbos to use them for a purpose that's mutar. For example, to take the hammer and use it to crack nuts. For example, to take the hammer and use it to crack nuts would be mutter on Shabbos. And we'll talk about more tomorrow about what dinim of what you're allowed to do with a hammer on Shabbos. You're allowed to use a hammer on Shabbos to crack nuts. That's called the tzorach gufay. You have it's a klisha malachta le'isr. The purpose of it is isr, because usually you use a hammer for things that are also on Shabbos, but you're allowed to pick it up on Shabbos and use it to crack nuts.